are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Friday, November 23rd, and happy Black Friday to you. Today we're going to be talking about the officials, something that I usually resist after Wednesday's, I wouldn't say debacle, but a game that certainly the officials had a hand in deciding. But this is your boy, Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, a sports writer here in the Motor City, covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Give me a follow on Twitter, by the way, at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also, the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And also check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. Saying, what's up to the new listeners out there who heard about the podcast from my friends and family over at Thanksgiving, and we appreciate that as well. And all you guys for giving a listen on the holiday weekend here. And thanks to myself for recording a Black Friday podcast when probably the downloads, I would imagine, will be down today as we're getting it out a little bit later because it was Thanksgiving and I didn't feel like doing a podcast last night. Went and saw Creed 2 instead. So hit me up on Twitter if you want my reaction to that movie. Thought it was not horrible, but certainly not as good as Creed and most of the other Rocky movies as well. But today we're going to look back on Wednesday's game against the Houston Rockets. Pistons lost down in Texas. We're also going to talk about the refs. I thought that they were extremely impactful to the end result on Wednesday. We're going to talk about the calls and no calls at the end of the game, and also one from the third quarter that I thought impacted the game in a major way. And we're also going to look ahead to tonight, some things to watch out for, in addition to next week for the Pistons as they get ready for an important swing starting tonight with those Rockets again. By the way, Pistons, as we know, dropped the first of a home-and-home series against the Rockets on Wednesday night, probably the one that they had the best chance of winning. I think we're going to look back on this two-game series, which might result in two losses, and believe that the Pistons had to take it on Wednesday night, given that the P.J. Tucker ejection happened in the fourth quarter when Houston needed him down the stretch, and also how well Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond played and how well the Pistons shot from deep as well. But it was not to be on Wednesday night on the road as the Pistons lose 126 to 124. Pistons were down 113 to 99 with 5:30 to go. So down 14, pretty much looked completely over at that point. But led by a fourth quarter barrage by Blake Griffin, the Pistons almost crawled all the way back. Blake was outstanding. 37 points and 11 rebounds in the loss, including 6 of 9 from three-point land and 5 of 5 on three-pointers in the fourth quarter. He was also 13 of 15 from the free throw line. But unfortunately, he had the late turnover on a pass that was deflected and stolen by James Harden, and also got called for a, let's just say, questionable for now offensive foul on what was the most important possession of the game for the Pistons. Andre Drummond had 20 points and 11 rebounds in just 28 minutes. I thought he equated himself well in the head-to-head matchup against one of the other top centers in the league, and Clint Capella. Although it looks like on the counting stats that he got outplayed by Capella, who had 27 points and 15 rebounds. We'll talk about that matchup a little bit later as well. 43 points in a game-high effort by reigning league MVP James Harden, who was magnificent, although such a troll. We'll talk about that a little bit too. Just an excellent player, so smooth, great with the handles, and able to do pretty much what he wants for most of the game. Another one of those tough guys to officiate in addition to Blake Griffin. But again, I thought we'd maybe drop the ball a little bit as officials in this one. James Harden was 19 of 19 from the free throw line, and that was one of the huge differences in the game. The Pistons shooting well on Wednesday, maybe their best performance of the season from three-point land. I didn't quite look that up, but they did finish 16 of 34 from three-point land, including to go 47.1% from deep. Again, another reason why I feel like they let their best chances slip a little bit. Although I will say that, you know, Ish Smith with the late three and then Reggie Bullock with the three at the buzzer helps those stats, obviously, and not very, you know, meaningful threes in the grand scheme of things. But when you're hot like that and you're getting the rolls and things are falling, you got to get those opportunities and win those games when things are going well, especially against these good teams on the road. And the Rockets, the team that we all know as the great three-point shooters in the league, 13 of 33 for 39%. So the Pistons got off more threes on a night when that was a good thing, because they were shooting at a high clip and also had a better percentage than the Rockets, one of the great three-point shooting teams of all time. And the Pistons weren't able to get the win. Something to keep an eye on tonight is who wins the three-point battle and subsequently who wins those games, because it's unusual for the Pistons to shoot so well and get off as many good shots as they did and lose that game. So again, I think we might be scratching our heads on Friday night thinking about what could have been on Wednesday night, as the Pistons are probably looking at a 500 record going into the weekend as they fall to 8-7. And like I said, could be back to 500 tonight with the 7 p.m. game at Little Caesars Arena against the Houston Rockets. I will be there. A couple more notes from Wednesday. I thought Langston Galloway was great off the bench. He had 13 points, efficient shooting, which is nice to see from him. Stanley Johnson was good as well, playing some good defense and also being not so bad offensively as well. I thought Reggie Jackson struggled in this one, and his minutes are dwindling. He only played 23 minutes despite getting the start. Ish Smith was the man off the bench and the guy that Dwayne Casey stuck with down the stretch. Even though he didn't play particularly great, he played pretty well. Got to the hole a couple times for some nice layups when it mattered. But the fact that Dwayne Casey seems to be going with Ish Smith down the stretch, even when Ish Smith is kind of just playing okay. And Reggie Jackson didn't have an awful game or anything like that, but I just think that's kind of telling that it seems like Ish Smith is maybe the preferred pick down the stretch for Dwayne Casey when all things are similarly pretty much equal between those two players. Just another indication to me that it might be big picture-wise something to look out for with Reggie Jackson over these next few months. And I know we talked about the trades with the Washington Wizards and John Wall, and you can throw Bradley Beal and Otto Porter into that mix as well. But I just really do honestly think it's something to watch out for, especially with a front office that might be itching to make a move, and teams like Washington who are looking at Reggie Jackson's contract, which in our eyes as Pistons fans has been a bit of an albatross these last couple of years. Well, suddenly it's expiring next year, and a much better contract than some of the other ones out there, particularly with John Wall of the Wizards. But yeah, something to keep an eye on with the Pistons down the stretch and how Reggie Jackson plays over these next couple weeks as we go into, you know, December 15th is a big date with free agents from this past offseason being able to be traded then. And I think that not only just the possibility of those particular free agents, but that's maybe a little bit of a window where trading season opens a little bit more for the whole NBA in terms of people being more willing to sit at the table and talk about deals. But another thing to keep an eye on is the Washington Wizards themselves. I know it's all the strife is being talked about. You read the article from Woj over the weekend about some things that happened, or this week during about some things that happened at practice with the team and insubordination from John Wall and everything. But something to keep an eye on is that these Wizards are, they're 6-11. So, I mean, they're not having a great season, obviously, but not as bad as it started. But they're creeping back up closer to the Eastern Conference playoff watch. They're at Toronto tonight. So if you're a Pistons fan, and then they got a back-to-back at home against New Orleans on Saturday. If you're a Pistons fan, I think you keep a close eye on both of those games and see how Washington does on the scoreboard and also in the locker room and all those reports that we're going to hear about that team over these next few weeks, because we know that they're going to be a hot topic across the NBA as well. And I'll talk a little bit later about a rumor, not a rumor, but a trade proposal that I heard on the Bill Simmons podcast that I listened to this morning. And see if maybe you guys have some thoughts on that. But up next, we're going to talk about the officials here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, something we avoid, which I'll pat myself on the back for. We're not talking about the officials quite a bit on this show, but we will talk about some important calls from Wednesday's game up next. But is your company looking for a new way to reach customers? You guys could be mentioned on Locked On Pistons right now. The podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with sponsors that they hear on their favorite podcast. Our demographic is 98% males with more education and more earning power than traditional media audiences. So have your company sponsor Locked On Pistons. If you're interested, get in touch with me by email at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
A little bit later on, we will break down tonight's game and look ahead to next week a little bit. But first, I wanted to pass along, I mentioned it, heard it on the Bill Simmons podcast, which they released on Thursday. I know we talk about The Ringer and Bill Simmons a little bit here on the show. They talked about the Pistons getting John Wall and giving up Reggie Jackson in a trade. And in addition to Reggie Jackson, the Pistons would be giving up Luke Kennard. And this is Bill Simmons talking to his friend Joe House, who appears on his podcast from time to time, a big Washington Wizards fan. So Bill framed that trade possibility to Joe House. And that was it. That was the whole trade that they talked about. I don't like it as a Pistons fan. As time goes on with this whole debacle that's going on in Washington, mostly behind the scenes, and again, I'm on record as saying I think the Pistons should explore a trade for John Wall. And I also do think that Reggie Jackson needs to be in it. And that's what would need to happen in terms of matching the salaries. And also because if you had John Wall and Reggie Jackson, you clearly would have redundancy in the roster there. But I also don't think it would be the worst thing in the world for the Pistons and Reggie Jackson to kind of move on from here. But when framed with that particular trade, Joe House said he basically just wants to get rid of Wall's contract and doesn't care what really comes back. And I agree with that. That probably should be what Washington's objective is. And since that's the case, why would the Pistons also give up Luke Kennard, who's one of their best assets as a good young player? If it's for salary matching, I think that the Pistons should get more in that deal and give up something like a negative asset like John Luehr. And then if Washington can match up that salary with like Markieff Morris, who's a good player, a nice tough player, and an expiring deal as well, I think that would be something that the Pistons should explore. So obviously Wall and Jackson would need to be in that trade, but then I think that the Pistons need to be one that acquire a little bit more in terms of capital in that one. And like I said, maybe throw in Luehr and Markieff Morris in that deal. Or maybe if Washington wants to hold on to that expiring deal, maybe you just keep it as Jackson and Wall. And maybe Washington throws in a couple second-round picks or something like that. Obviously, you'd think they'd be very hesitant to throw up a first-round pick in that deal, probably rightfully so, just because it's going to be a team that's going to be on the rebuild. But I think that Ed Stefanski is in a position of power here. You look around the league, there's probably not a lot of teams that want to absorb that $40 million per season extension that starts kicking in next year at 4 years for John Wall. But it reminds you a lot of the Blake Griffin situation, and that John Wall contract is huge. There's no doubt about it. Kind of a bad start to the season for John Wall so far in terms of the way he's played offensively and defensively. But I think, as Bill Simmons pointed out, and I've pointed out on this podcast in the past, given the fact that the Pistons made the Blake Griffin deal, however you felt about it and feel about it today, it tied up the Pistons' cap for the next few years, certainly the next three, while Drummond and Griffin, so those contracts, are on the books together. There's no way that they're adding a meaningful free agent this summer, and certainly not until the summer of 2020 at the earliest, after Reggie and Luehr's contracts come off the books. And we know that the Pistons aren't a great free agent destination in terms of the open market anyway. So to upgrade this team before 2020 summer and take advantage of the upgrade that they got on the roster with Blake Griffin last year, I think that you need to act before 2020. And to make a meaningful upgrade in the roster, you've got to figure out a way to make a deal. And I know that's huge luxury tax implications. That's getting into the tax probably this year, but certainly starting next year, you're definitely a luxury tax team when Wall's extension kicks in. And more about Wall, by the way, something I want to debunk a little bit here is that people dismiss his shooting and saying John Wall can't shoot. Well, he shot 37% from three last year, well above league average, and he shot 35%, which is just about league average, 3 years ago. Now, it seems like every other year he's kind of had a rough shooting year, but certainly, above Stanley Johnson, even in those bad years, above a bad shooter, he's up above 30% every year. But since 2013-14, his fourth year in the league, he's been a 34% shooter from three. So taking those good years and the bad years from him from three-point land, which is only fair, he's at 34% since 2013-14. League average in that time is just above 35%. Sometimes some seasons up to 36%. So he's 1, maybe 2% lower than league average. So to sit here and say that he can't shoot seems a little bit disingenuous to me. Obviously, we've talked about this with Reggie Jackson in the past. Those guys that have the ball in their hands late in shot clocks that need to force up some shots sometimes, I give a little bit of leeway for the percentages of those types of players, the Blake Griffins of the world, the Reggie Jacksons of the world, who are asked to command offenses sometimes, that sometimes you just got to throw up some bad threes, and that hurts their overall numbers. And I think that John Wall is obviously another player in that capacity. And by the way, Reggie Jackson, a worse three-point shooter than John Wall by the numbers, especially these last couple years. I think he was about a 31% shooter last year, 30% so far this year, 33.2% since in that same period of 2013-14, and now, where John Wall is a 34% shooter, Reggie Jackson was a 33% shooter. So an upgrade there for the Pistons shooting-wise. And just moving on to the officials here, want to talk about that after a tough night with the Stripes for the Pistons on Wednesday night. And I feel like kind of an idiot because after the first game of the season, I talked about how Blake Griffin with the game against the Brooklyn Nets, isn't it nice having a player who gets superstar calls? But just with Blake, the inconsistency in the officiating of around him has been kind of maddening, and obviously based on the physical style of play that he has. Overall, I don't think that Wednesday was necessarily a bad example for 48 minutes in terms of how Blake was officiated. He got some calls, shot 15 free throws. But the most important play, with the Pistons down by four with 21 seconds left, he's 5-for-5 from three. Pistons fans are expecting him to make another great play as they were accustomed to in the fourth quarter from him on Wednesday. They called the offensive foul as he's got the ball at the three-point land. One of the players makes a curl around him. Kind of a quasi dribble handoff type of action without the dribble handoff as Blake, it's one of those new offensive plays that we see quite a bit that teams run. And Blake, he's in a triple threat position, so he's obviously making a basketball move. But as the defender goes around him, you could see him stick his arm out a little bit, of a clear out there as the defender tries to get around him when he has the ball. And look, you can see what the official called, but it's a bad call. There was not enough contact. The arm wasn't out of a normal position, an egregious amount from a normal basketball play. And it should have been, if anything, it should have been a no call. And if you had to make a foul call on that play, I would have called it on the defensive player for getting in the way of the guy with the ball. And again, it's another reason why I've always said at the end of games, officials need to swallow the whistles. And that's an important reason why you can't, if you make the call on Blake like they did, the game is now over at that point. You have just decided the game on that call. And I never want officials deciding the game on questionable late calls. And again, if anything, in that situation, you give the star the call. And now with Blake being a star, as he has been for years, I think it's complicated at best with his relationship with the refs, and we've seen that throughout the season. Now, earlier, I thought there was a call that I think was even, in some ways more impactful to the overall game and much worse call, just a horrible call. The Pistons down three midway through the third quarter. Andre Drummond called for a foul on James Ennis, who drives to the lane. James Ennis, by the way, made two big threes later on in the fourth quarter. But the foul call on Drummond, which is a phantom foul, there was pretty much no contact on Drummond who made the block. And again, I don't know that he made any contact with James Ennis. As clean a block as you'll see, even George Blaha and Greg Kelser, Special K on the broadcast made note of it. We don't see where the foul is here. And this is his fourth. Andre Drummond had to come out for the rest of the third quarter. And then when he returned to start the fourth, the Pistons were down by 10 at that time. So a 7-point swing. In that period, when Drummond's on the bench, John Luehr comes in. He just has no answer for Clint Capella. Two dunks right away on the next two possessions for Capella against the Pistons. And some more baskets at the rim with Drummond out and Luehr in for the entire team for the Rockets. And Drummond, by the way, playing a lot better at the rim, doing a lot better job of being that rim protector that's so important these days. So kudos to Andre for picking up the defense a little bit. And just it's a disastrous call. But by the way, we do have to blame Andre Drummond for some ways in this. Picks up the two early fouls 5 minutes into the game. Once again, enough, Andre, with the early fouls. And I know he's being hammered about it by the coaching staff and probably has been for years. He has to at some point learn. He will at some point learn. But we can't have Andre Drummond going to the bench with two fouls halfway through the first quarter or earlier than that most nights. It's getting so old to watch as Pistons fans. That has to stop for this team to have success overall throughout the course of the season. One more thing on the officials, and I know this is kind of a joking matter with a lot of fans, and it's just one of those things that happens in a lot of NBA games, but James Harden, 19-for-19 from the line, should have been called for 19 lane violations on all those shots. And I know it's kind of, James Harden is the definition of a troll with referees and media and all that stuff. Just probably an elaborate joke by him that he does that on purpose to try to goat officials and challenge them into making that calls. But when you shoot a free throw, you are not allowed to not only touch the ground past the free throw line, but you're not allowed to cross the plane of the free throw line until the ball makes some kind of contact with the rim or goes in the basket or whatever. And Harden does it every time. Not only is he crossing the plane of the free throw line, he is actively taking a step forward, a large step forward into the lane every time he shoots a free throw. And again, I know it's the league MVP, and I know it's something that the league would probably have to come down before the game or something like that and say, hey, James, we're actually going to be calling this now, so stop doing that. If the rule is on the books, you need to call the rule. I know it's one of those rules like James Harden with a lot of the travels he makes and step backs that don't get called. One of those things that he just kind of gets away with because he's a superstar and officials. I don't know. I'd be interested to hear what NBA refs have to say is the actual reason why those kind of lane violations aren't called. And he's not the only one who does it. And Blake Griffin takes a step forward, but he does it when the ball has already gone into the basket. So, and it's a lot of he's not committing a lane violation in those shots. So, and I know we're sounding like old man fuddy-duddy here talking about a lane violation that doesn't get called around the league often, but it's something that as a basketball fan, it drives you crazy to see things that are obviously violations that are not being called by officials. And I want to hear your thoughts on that too, so get in touch with me. But the Locked On Podcast Network, doing unprecedented things on Twitter and Instagram. On Twitter and Instagram, follow Locked On NBA Net. Great for your feeds, the ultimate feed for Twitter to follow that one with all the hosts giving their 2 cents on game night and everything else. On Instagram, clips from the shows, so you can check out the highlights from other shows across the landscape of the Locked On Podcast Network. We appreciate that. And then next, we're going to break down tonight's game for the Pistons against the Houston Rockets and also look ahead to next week a little bit. That's next here on the Locked On Pistons Podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Also, what a Lions game on Thursday, huh? Just a typical Thanksgiving effort from the boys in Honolulu Blue. But Matt Derry has everything you need to know about the Locked On Lions podcast. You know Matt Derry from Detroit Radio. He's got a daily look at the Leos. Check that one out for sure. I wonder if Jim Bob Cooter survives even Black Friday today. Possibly, you know, the Lions expected obviously to lose next week to the Rams at home, and which should be a huge contrast of offensive styles, quote unquote. I wonder if Jim Bob Cooter even gets to the Buffalo and Arizona road trip, which is coming up in a few weeks. Keep an eye on that. No inside information there, just some wild speculation. We all agree that Jim Bob won't be back next year by, you know, most people's opinions. So why not bring in a George Godsey, the quarterback's coach, elevate him to offensive coordinator, give him a little trial during the rest of this lost season anyway, see how that goes. Just a thought from your Locked On Pistons host here and also writer for the Detroit News with the Detroit Lions. But anyway, check out that show on the network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Also, the Locked On Wolverines with Isaiah Hole, big game coming up tomorrow in Columbus. He's got everything you need to know about that. Locked On Spartans with Will Hunter, interesting basketball season unfolding as the Spartans get a big win against UCLA on late Thursday night that you probably missed because you were already sleeping from the turkey. But the Pistons tonight against the Rockets, anywhere from 3.5 to 5-point underdogs at home. So we see that swing from 7 or 8.5 that they were last on Wednesday, but that even swung even more than just the home court would dictate with the 3-point change there. So we will see. Interesting to see what kind of adjustments that Houston makes on defending Blake Griffin, who had his way. I got to believe that PJ Tucker might be licking his chops a little bit there as a tough, hard-nosed defender who got tossed, I believe, in late in the third quarter against the Pistons on Wednesday. So maybe we'll see some PJ Tucker versus Blake Griffin. On the other end, we'll see how Stanley Johnson reacts to game two against James Harden, and also if anyone else can have some success against the league MVP. Clearly, you're not going to stop James Harden, but just to get in his way a little bit and not allow him to parade 19 times at the free throw line like he did on Wednesday would be nice too. I'm also interested to see Andre Drummond and Clint Capella part two. See if Drummond can stay out of that early foul trouble and continue the success that he had against Clint Capella when he wasn't on the bench with that foul trouble. So like I said, Pistons tonight, 7 o'clock against Houston, and then a start of a homestand I will be there for the Detroit News tonight, by the way. Come say hi if you're there. Sunday, Pistons, and check this one out this weekend as well. 4 o'clock against the Phoenix Suns, worst team in the NBA. Also, Tuesday, the Pistons have the New York Knicks. I'll be at that one, too. Friday against the Chicago Bulls after that. And then Saturday, the second of a back-to-back against the Golden State Warriors. So a week, really, you've got Houston, Phoenix, New York, Chicago, and Golden State. The Pistons will be heavy favorites in 3 of those games and underdogs, decided underdogs, in the Houston and Golden State games. So you would expect a 3-2 output for the Pistons in that one, which would get them back up to 2 games over 500. But hopeful Pistons fans might want to hope for a 4-1 or even 5-0 in this set. We will see. But we will see how this all shakes down. I'm predicting 4-1. I'm going to be optimistic and say they either get the win tonight or on Saturday against Golden State. I'm actually looking at that Saturday Golden State game next week as the bigger possibility for the win for the Pistons. But go ahead and let me know what you think. 810-666-1546. You can always call us and leave a voicemail on that line or text us. We play a lot of those messages here on the show. And give us a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also, the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. Give us a like on the Facebook page at Locked On Pistons-Matt Schoch. Give us a rating and review on iTunes. Remember, the Pistons Nike City Edition jerseys tonight, black and silver. Don't be shocked when you see that on the television as well. But this is your host, Matt Schoch, of the Locked On Pistons podcast, saying thanks for listening, thanks for the support, and have a great weekend, everyone.